WATD presents John Paul, the Car Doctor. All things automotive. Have questions? Call 781-837-4900. Now, here's John Paul, the Car Doctor.
And good Sunday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD. My name's John Paul, the Car Doctor, here to help you with your car problems. Yes, it is actually 11:02. It's not 10:02. If you haven't set your clocks ahead. And actually, that's one of the things we're going to talk about today. With us on the phone is Jillian Young. She is the Director of Public Relations and Public Affairs for AAA Northeast. Jillian, good morning.
Good morning, John. Nice to speak with you.
Well, you know, everybody seems like, who I've talked to this morning, seems a little bit drowsy because of that whole changing the clocks back. And we found out some research through the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety that drowsy driving crashes increase a lot because of this little 1 hour loss of sleep, right?
They do. So, you know, drivers get behind the wheel when they're sleep deprived and their circadian rhythms are kind of out of whack. And our research has shown that crashes increase in the days following the time change.
And one of the things that I learned years ago was it's not just a day or two. It can take up to a couple of weeks before your body readjusts just from that little 1 hour change in sleep, but also, you know, the days get brighter earlier, they stay longer, brighter longer. Everything's just off a little bit, and that's that circadian rhythm thing, right?
It is, yes. And that's why it's really important for drivers to monitor their sleep schedule, not just, you know, last night going into today, but in the days ahead, because the only substitute for the lack of sleep is more sleep. And so that's why it's really, really important to pay attention to that sleep schedule and not just rely on cues from your body, because your body won't always tell you how tired you are. We really recommend that 7 hours of sleep to make sure that you're good to get on the road.
7 hours? I don't think I've ever had 7 hours of sleep.
Well, as someone with a young son at home, I certainly know all too well how hard it can be to get those hours of sleep.
And, you know, you brought up a really good point about, you know, when you're tired, the only thing that can really help is sleep. And that's something that sometimes people face when they're on the road, too. You know, some people will, you know, decide they're going to do a family trip, but they want to try to maximize, you know, maybe the amount of time they're going to spend at, you know, Disney World or someplace like that. So they decide they're going to try to make the trip from New England to Florida in one day, and they're going to drive 24 hours straight through, and they get tired on the way, and they're like, "Well, I'll drink coffee, I'll drink you know, Red Bull, I'll, you know, try to do something." But really, it's sleep your body needs, and there's no substitute for that, right?
There's no substitute for that sleep, and you really want to be traveling at times of day when you would normally be awake. It can be tempting to cut into your sleep to get on the road really early in the morning, but that's really not recommended. You want to travel at a time of day when you would normally be awake to help you stay alert on the road.
Absolutely. And the other thing, you know, we're sort of heading into allergy season right now too, so some of these cold and flu medications and allergy medication, they can make you pretty tired too, right?
They can, and we recommend that drivers avoid driving after taking a medication that might cause drowsiness or other kinds of impairment. So it's really important that you check those kinds of seasonal medications that you might be taking for the first time in a long time to see if drowsiness is a side effect.
And the other thing is, you know, you're on the, you know, whether you're on the road or you just, you know, whether it's a trip or because of this seasonal change, you know, this isn't the time where you want to have the big spaghetti and meatballs lunch, right?
No, you really don't. I mean, everyone knows that feeling after having a nice big lunch, a heavy meal. It makes you a little sleepy. And so you really want to avoid heavy foods before setting out on the road. They're going to make you feel tired and sluggish. You eat that big meal, you might be driving in a warm car with the sun on you, and it's very, very easy to feel tired.
Yeah, it really is. And even the idea of having a passenger with you, and maybe, you know, you take turns driving on these long trips, or whether it's just because of, you know, the sleep change, being in the passenger seat, is you're almost as active as the driver at that point. So if you are going to try to switch off, you know, maybe that passenger who's going to take over the wheel and you as a driver, get in the back seat and try to get a little bit of sleep back there. Maybe you're never going to get sleep in the passenger seat.
No, you want someone in the passenger who is going to be alert. That's a very helpful tip for driving, especially for a long distance. Make sure you have someone with you in that passenger seat who's keeping an eye out along with you.
Yeah, and this little bit of a time change that we did, it relates in some cases to almost like being like a drunk driver, right?
It does, yes. So drivers who slept for less than 5 hours the night before may have a crash risk comparable to driving under the influence of alcohol. And losing just those couple hours of sleep can double the risk of a crash. And, you know, we've known for a long time that crashes involving drowsy driving are underreported because drivers don't always report themselves that they were tired before a crash. And so the study from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety is actually showing that drowsy driving is a factor in 10 times as many traffic fatalities as the traditional crash data indicates. So it's a much bigger problem than even the crash reporting data shows.
Yeah, it really is. And you're right. People don't report the "I almost got into a crash" kind of thing. They just, you know, that doesn't happen. You know, you may have fallen asleep for just seconds, and there's something called micro naps where people literally fall asleep for a second and then wake right back up again. But at 60 miles an hour, that 1 second means you're traveling almost 90 feet. So you fall asleep for a second, you don't. You may not even notice. And I remember seeing one of these early studies about sleep deprivation, and it was done in hospitals with doctors who were going through training. And what they would do is they'd be up for, you know, 24 hours straight, you know, doing their rounds with other doctors, and they'd literally be, you know, standing there with a clipboard, and, you know, they'd say, you know, "Are you allergic to, you know, penicillin or whatever?" And they would literally nod off and not record the right answer because they've been up for so long and they didn't even notice. But it was that little tiny 1 second nod where you're not paying attention, but behind the wheel, that 1 second at 60 miles an hour is 90 feet. That's a long time not to be paying attention. So we need to get that sleep, right?
You're absolutely right, John. When you're on the road, even shutting your eyes for a millisecond is incredibly dangerous. So, you know, realizing how prevalent drowsy driving crashes are should really just be a wake-up call to all of us to really think about our sleep before we get on the road, the best way to protect ourselves and others on the road race with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And another way to protect ourselves is to make sure our vehicles are safe. And, you know, maybe not everyone got the Hallmark card this week, but this was National Vehicle Safety Recall Week. It started last week and sort of ended today. But knowing that your vehicle could have a serious defect and the vehicle's been recalled is really important to do. And I read a story just yesterday, and the headline was, "Why are there so many vehicle recalls?" And compared to 30 or 40 years ago, cars were relatively simple. They didn't have a lot of computer systems in them. They didn't have a lot of technology in them. They didn't have as many warnings in them. But today, we're seeing, I think Toyota just recalled just the other day, 1.1 million vehicles. We're seeing literally tens of thousands of vehicles recalled almost every day. So people really need to pay attention to these recalls, don't they?
They do, and you're absolutely right that the volume of recalls is a very high. You know, in the last couple of weeks of February alone, NHTSA safety recalls affected more than 1.4 million vehicles, and that was just in a couple of weeks. When you look at the 2023 data that NHTSA just put out, safety recalls affected more than 34 million vehicles in 2023 alone. That is a lot of vehicles. And more than 4.7 of those recalls included advisories urging drivers to park outside, away from structures, and that's actually due to risk of fire. So these recalls can be very serious, and it's not something that vehicle owners want to ignore.
Yeah, and it, and sometimes it's really hard. I just answered a question for a woman the other day that had a, I think it was a Hyundai, and she was advised that she should park it outside because of a danger of a, they're nice. They don't actually call them fires. They call them combustible events, which sounds nice, you know. And but it's not so bad. But it was one of those things, and she said, but the problem is they don't have the parts for the car yet. What am I supposed to do? Should I drive the car? And it was sort of interesting because I did a little bit of research, and you know, she was really quite worried, and I said, well, certainly follow the advice of parking the car outside if that's an option. And you know, the other thing, but maybe there's a little bit of, I guess, calming effect of the fact that of the, I think it was a little under a million vehicles that were recalled, there were four that had an incident. Now, certainly that doesn't minimize, you know, how serious it could be, because it was water that got into a harness and could cause some overheating, and that overheating could eventually turn into a combustible event. And you know, it doesn't minimize it, but you know, the chances of, you know, four out of a million cars, you know, pretty low odds. So at that point I just said to her, you know, call the manufacturer, call the dealer, let them know, but also, you know, don't ignore it either. Just because it was only four cars out of a million had a real problem doesn't mean you should forget about it. You should get it taken care of. So people need to be aware of the recalls, but they also need to know that the cars are being recalled for their safety. To make sure, you know, it's not that the car is a junky car by any means. It just means that it's being recalled for a safety reason, and that's for your benefit.
Absolutely. And the great thing for drivers to know is that the repairs are free. Go to the dealership, you'll get the repair for free, and that makes sure that you don't have that risk. And of course, there can be some delays with parts availability. You just want to stay on it and get that fixed as soon as you can.
Yeah, I know my wife's car is a Volkswagen. It was recalled nearly a year ago because of an airbag issue. So serious thing. But the parts have just become available in the last week. So it has been, you know, it had been a year, and you're like, oh, you know, should you drive it? Well, you know, first off, how often do airbags deploy? You know, you have to kind of look at that. But at the end of the day, you also have to go, well, good, the recall, now I can go get the car fixed. I can get it fixed for free. And in 99% of the cases, these recalls are something that can be done over the life of the car. In fact, I was talking to somebody from NHTSA probably a year ago, and they actually recorded a recall of a 1977 car that came in. And I'm like, really? You know, a car that's nearly 50 years old came in for a recall? And they said, yeah, apparently it had never, you know, it got recalled 50 years ago, and the person finally got around to it, I guess. And you kind of wonder how that could possibly happen. But the idea that it did happen. And recalls aren't just cars. They could be car seats. They could be tires. They could be related equipment. But when it comes to cars, they've made it really easy now to check for your recall. NHTSA has a great app, and now you can either enter your vehicle identification number, or in some cases, you can enter your license plate, and you enter your license plate in the NHTSA app or on their website, and there's all of a sudden your car, and let you know if there's a recall.
That's right. They've made it so much easier. Almost everyone knows their license plate. The VIN, you've got to go out and check. I actually, right before jumping on with you, checked my license plate through NHTSA's new tool. I do have an open recall on my car. I'm using this Vehicle Safety Recalls Week as a reminder to go get that fixed. But it is really, really easy to check. And we do recommend that vehicle owners check their vehicles and other related equipment at least 2 times a year. And actually, when we change the clock, it's a good time to do it. So, you know, do it today if you haven't already.
So we have a lot to do today. We have to change our clocks, make sure we've done all of them. And in some cars, and in fact, I just answered a question this morning from somebody who says, I've been in my car for 45 minutes. I can't figure out how to change a clock. And, you know, sometimes it does require some steps to go through to do it. But go change all your clocks in your house, on your microwave and, you know, stove and whatever. Put new batteries in your smoke detector if you have to do those, and check for vehicle recalls, right?
Yes, a good little checklist to have on this day. Make sure that you're safe getting to where you're going on time. No confusion with your clocks. It's a great reminder to get these things done.
Were you worried you were going to oversleep this morning?
I wasn't. You know, I have a young son who's usually up before we are. But I'm an early riser. But I know for folks who enjoy some sleep in the morning, it's a tough time change with the jump ahead. But I don't mind it. I have been yearning for these sunny afternoons. So I'm thrilled to have a little bit more light at the end of the day. And I did go to bed a little bit early last night to make sure that I got my sleep before I got on the road today.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the National Highway Traffic website is nhtsa.gov, and you can find the recalls, and you can look for things like, were tires recalled? Were, you know, is your son's car seat recalled? RVs,
yep.
things even like bike racks get recalled. So, you know, if you're thinking about, you know, getting your bicycles ready for summer vacation and you carry them on a bike rack, make sure the bike rack hasn't been recalled, because some of them do. That happens. So looking at all this various equipment that the government kind of keeps an eye on, and again, there's thousands and thousands of recalls for all kinds of stuff. And if you have any of these things, check the recalls, see what you need to do. Sometimes it's relatively simple. It could be a kid's car seat and the material that it's made out of is maybe not as flame resistant as it should be. So they send you a new seat cover for it. Or maybe it's your car is as simple as it was labeled incorrectly about airbag information. And you can actually get the label in the mail from the manufacturer, and you can stick it on yourself and get that done. But other times you do need to go in. And I've had two recalls in recent years on my car. One, interestingly enough, was you were supposed to park it outside because it could combust. And the other one had to do with a potential engine issue. And there's actually a third recall that may or may not affect my vehicle. They need to actually look at it because it's right on the fringe, but it's not a safety related issue at this point. But the two recalls that were done, both of them were done within an hour. I went to the local dealership. I had a 9 o'clock appointment in the morning. I walked up the street to a little diner. I had breakfast. By the time I finished my last sip of coffee, I was getting a phone call. Your car's all set. It was nice and easy. Went in, picked up my keys, and drove away in a safer car. And that's what we want people to do. We want people to be as safe as in their cars as possible, and we want them to be as safe a driver as possible and make sure they get enough sleep.
Absolutely. That actually sounds like a really nice morning you have. And in addition to NHTSA's online tool, they also have the Safer Car app. So if you download the app, you can do it right on your phone. It's super handy and convenient.
Yeah, that's the way I do it. I look periodically on my phone to make sure everything's up to where it should be, and just get it done when it needs to be done. It's that easy. And as you pointed out, when it comes to recalls, they're done for free. And even sometimes when your vehicle goes in for service to a dealership, they'll run the recall checklist and see whether you missed any recalls, and they'll do it at the same time. And again, it's done at no charge to the consumer. It's the vehicle's repaired. You're safer because of it. Go get it done. Don't procrastinate, I guess, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it can be easy to put it off. Everyone's really busy. The good thing is the manufacturers are really good about following up. I've got a potential battery issue with my vehicle. I've received several notices so that I can't continue putting it off. They've made it impossible to ignore. And again, you can have a great little morning like you just said you had, John. Bring your vehicle in, get some coffee, get some breakfast or lunch. Hopefully it's something that can be done fairly quickly and you'll be on your way you'll be safer, your vehicle will be safer, and everyone else on the roads will be safer for it.
Absolutely. Well, Jillian, I want to thank you for taking a little time out of your Sunday morning and joining us on the Car Doctor program.
Absolutely. I'm happy to chat with you, John.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye now. And change that last clock. I know there's got to be one somewhere you missed.
There must be. I'll go check now.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Why don't we take a break, pay some bills. When we come back, why don't we talk to you about you and your car problems? Maybe you have a few. And we'll also talk about some of the things that we got in the mail this week, some of the questions we got. We got some really interesting ones. If you want to join us, our phone number is 781-837-4900. 781-837-4900. Phone lines are open if you want to join us. We'll be right back.
AAA is with you at every moment in your life. They have 24-hour, 7 roadside assistance, which covers you in any car you're driving or riding in, even a rental or your friend's wheels. They have great member rates on home and auto insurance, savings on travel, hotels, and rental cars, and discounts on hundreds of your favorite brands. You're covered on and off the road. Learn more at AAA.com/join.
Are you tired of endlessly searching for a reliable painting company? Then look no further than One Stop Painting. Hi, this is Jeff Cohen, owner of One Stop Painting. My local family company has been here for nearly 4 decades, keeping homes and businesses beautiful and protected from the harsh New England climate. We can handle any interior or exterior painting project, regardless of the size or complexity. But that's not all. We also offer soft washing and restoration services to give your home a fresh, revived look. From repairing basic wood rot to replacing doors, windows, and siding, our full-service carpentry teams can fix and repair any issues. At One Stop Painting, we never subcontract our work. That means you'll receive the highest quality service from our Better Business Bureau accredited company. Don't settle for mediocre service. Your home deserves the best. One Stop Painting is here to deliver. Call us today at 508-888-3500 or visit us online at onestoppainting.com to schedule your painting project today. Again, that's 508-888-3500.
One Stop Painting and Renovating.
Won't you step into the light?
Hi, I'm Dan Chauvin. Step into the light and tune into Twilight Showcase Radio, hosted by Sandy Stride and Keith James on 95.9 WATD and 95.9WATD.com. Search for Twilight Showcase on Facebook and visit twilightshowcase.org.
Twilight Showcase, tonight from 8 to 10 on 95.9 WATD. Make an appointment Sunday morning at 11 for John Paul, the Car Doctor, on 95.9 WATD. Now, back to the Car Doctor.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD. And you can also listen to previous programs if you go to any one of those places where you find podcasts, or you can go to WATD's website and look for podcasts. And I did a little, I was checking around on something on podcasts the other day, and I found some podcast rater, and it rated the Car Doctor radio podcast in the top 10% of all the podcasts in the world. And I was pretty happy with myself until I said, I wonder how other podcasts compare. So I checked Hometown Ghost Story Podcast, which rates in the top 0.5% of podcasts. So I'm nothing compared to Jesse and the boys who do the Hometown Ghost Stories.
I had no idea. So that, that's fun news.
Yeah, you're in the top 0.5%.
Hey, all right.
I don't know what that does for you or me, but, you know,
hopefully it makes my hair grow.
It could happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything's possible.
Or maybe somebody will send you hair-growing medication.
There we go.
Yeah, there you go. Our phone number again, 781-837-4900. Let's talk to, I think it's Jay in Marshfield. Jay?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I'm just waking up, you know.
That hour of sleep, yeah.
I'm telling you. Hey, question for you. If I heard correctly, you guys were talking about recalls on cars?
Yep.
Okay. Do recalls ever expire? Do you know that?
Not generally. I heard from the NHTSA people. They did a recall on a 50-year-old car. And
really?
Yeah. Yeah, it had something to do with broken motor mounts on a Chevy, and there was another one that had to do with one of the original cars that had an airbag put in it back in the 80s. So yeah, they don't expire. Mostly though, and I'll say that there's certain ones that have like a 10-year window, but for the most part they never expire. So if you all of a sudden, you know, you went on the National Highway Traffic Safety website and put in your license plate number, and it goes, oh, this is this recall that was issued 3 years ago on a emission systems pump. Yeah, still, okay. Yeah, they should still do it. They should still do it for free.
Okay, awesome. I will try it out. I just wasn't sure. I'm glad you. Oh, at least you lead me in the right direction.
No, because you know it's a safety issue, and the manufacturer's obligation is to keep their car safe, and you know they need to take care of it.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Okay, sure thing.
It.
Yep.
Take care. Bye.
Our phone number again, 781-837-4900. If you would like to join us, phone lines are open. We can talk to you about your car or whatever you have on your mind. Couple of things that came in. Somebody had a 2021 Chevrolet Silverado crew cab with a 3-liter Duramax diesel in it. And they say, I've routinely changed the oil every 5,000 miles, even though the manual calls for changing it, the oil at every 7,500 miles. Or is shown on the oil monitor system. Is the 5,000 mile change overkill? Also, when I get a new vehicle, I change the oil at 1,000 mile mark based on recommendations from friends that there's more wear and tear with a new engine during the first 1,000 miles. Is this also overkill? There was a time when you bought a new car and it was recommended by a lot of people that during the, you know, after the first 500 miles, go change the oil. And that would take out any of the assembly material, metal shavings, all kinds of junk that would show up in the bottom of the engine oil pan. And it probably made some sense. Today, though, the assembly techniques are much cleaner. Engines do a, you know, engine assembly, you know, engines are pretty much broken in right at the factory now, so that's not really necessary. But there still is sometimes a type of break-in oil that is in the engine when it is first assembled, and that allows like the rings to see properly. Back in the old days, whenever the old days were, break-in oil was basically non-detergent oil. It had no cleaning materials in it, so it would allow rings to seat in better. In fact, back when Saturns were a brand, you know, the GM spinoff of the plastic body car, most of them were plastic body when they first came out, those cars were actually sort of a weird cult with some people. And, people really liked them, and they did kind of crazy things with them. But sometimes people would immediately on the first oil change, and maybe even they change your oil at 1,000 miles because their, you know, wife's uncle's friend said you really need to do that, and they would put in synthetic oil. And the synthetic oil, because it was a little bit more slippery, wouldn't allow the rings to seat properly and wouldn't allow the rings to mate to the engine blocks. In fact, Saturn had a problem where they were doing some disassembly and they weren't seeing this nice cross hatching that you would see inside an engine because of the synthetic oil didn't allow the rings to seat the way they should. So do you need to change oil at 500 miles or 1,000 miles? No. In fact, the test cars that I drive, when I drive a press car, you know, they're serviced right by the book. So they're, you know, 7,500 miles. It might be a once-a-year oil change. Those are driven by, you know, could be 100 different people over the press life of that vehicle. And they're resold. I bought one once years back. Never had a problem with it. I knew it just had the regular routine maintenance, not necessary. So is 5,000-mile oil change overkill? No. You do 7,500 miles to maintain the warranty. But could you go 5,000 miles? Couldn't. Certainly can't hurt. Depending on the type of driving you're doing, you know, with this Duramax diesel, you're towing a trailer, you're carrying heavy loads with it. Again, 7,500 miles, you'll maintain the warranty. 5,000 miles, you know, changing the oil a little bit early certainly can't hurt. And a lot of times it's recommended. Somebody else writes in, they have a 2012 Nissan Pathfinder with 200,000 miles. It's been well maintained. It's not required any major repairs other than some work on the rear suspension framework. That sounds serious. To this point, should I have a complete vehicle inspection in anticipation of a road trip? Is there anything in particular I should be concerned about given the age and mileage of the vehicle? First off, I'd be, I guess, a little bit concerned about that suspension thing. What was done? What was wrong? Was it rust? Was it rot? Whatever the case is, make sure that, you know, that's fine. You know, did they replace a subframe? Did they just undercoat something? My car, for instance, has been recalled because of potential of rust in the rear suspension. And what's interesting is in Massachusetts it's been recalled, in Florida it hasn't been recalled. And since now my car spends an equal amount of time in Florida as it does in Massachusetts, do I need to be as concerned about rust? Probably not. But still, when I get back to Massachusetts, I am going to have whatever it is, I'm going to have it inspected. And what they do is they spray a undercoating type spray. And I was looking at the, I kind of wonder whether it'll get done the way it's supposed to, because it's a pretty elaborate procedure to get it done. It's going to be more than just breakfast. I think it's going to be breakfast and lunch at the local dealership. So walk up the street, get breakfast, walk around for a little bit longer, and then go get lunch, and maybe by then it will get done. But it looks like they do a very substantial rust-proofing of the vehicle using what looks like wax oil. And wax oil is that product. We've had the folks from wax oil on the program before. And wax oil is that product. It's sort of an undercoating. It's a hard wax undercoating. And it is something you just do once. You don't have to do it periodically. You don't have to come in and have it checked. It puts you put this layer of this waxy stuff on. It stays on pretty much forever. The only way you actually get it off is you steam clean it off. With hot steam, it will actually melt it off. But other than that, it pretty much lasts forever. I've used it on my wife's Volkswagen. I got a couple of cans of it and sprayed pretty thoroughly underneath it. And when I had it up on a lift last spring, I looked under there and it still looked really good. My little boat trailer that I have here in Florida on my little tiny boat, it gets rusty from getting dipped in the water. And I don't put it in and out of the water all the time, but I do. And I should have done it when I first got the trailer to try to preserve it, but it did get a little bit rusty, so I went out there and kind of took a wire brush and loosened up any loose rust and sprayed it all. So, you know, that's, I think, it looks like the same product that they're using on the recall. It looks too suspiciously not like it. They also have a crack and crevice tool where it's a spray can with a long straw on it. You stick it in holes in the vehicle and spray in there and just rust-proof it from the inside out. But going back to what other things you should do, certainly, you know, look at the tires, see if there's any possible damage from winter potholes. You want to make sure that any, you know, did you hit a pothole? Car seems okay, but, you know, maybe it's not 100% okay. Get the car up in the air on a lift where they can inspect the tires, make sure there's no cuts and bruises and bulges that could fail, that tire could fail out on the highway. So make sure all the tires are good and make sure the tires are properly inflated. They have enough tread, certainly. Make sure all the lights and wipers work. There's nothing worse than, you know, driving along and finding out you only had one headlight that's on, or, you know, your wipers are chattering. Get those taken care of. Do an oil change, and at the same time when they do the oil change, they'll check all the other major fluids, make sure everything is okay. Check the coolant, the engine coolant, make sure it's in good shape. Check where this is a 2012, it's a 14-year-old vehicle. Make sure the radiator and heater hoses all look to be in good shape. Also make sure that the radiator looks like it's okay at 12 years old. Could the radiator be starting to corrode? It's possible. So take a bright flashlight and look around and make sure that the that everything looks okay. So you want to make sure that the radiator's in good shape. And also I would keep kind of an emergency kit of things with the vehicle. So what I keep in the trunk of my car, I don't go crazy with tools because there's only so much you can do. On when I do my return trip to Massachusetts, I do put a little box of tools in my car. I'm not going to do much, really, but it is just a little box of tools, emergency stuff. But I will also keep a emergency jump pack, so you know, so I can jump start my own car in case the battery goes dead. If I do something stupid like leave a door open or lights are on or something like that and it kills the battery, I want to be able to jump start my own car just to be able to do it quick and easy and get out of the way. I also keep a portable air compressor in all of our family vehicles. We have the one we keep up north and the two we keep here, just in case you get a flat tire somewhere. You know, if it's a matter of something that's a little bit low, it's a whole lot easier to go pump that tire up and get it to a tire store. Yes, you can put the spare on. Yes, you can call AAA, but the idea that you can pump it up and get it moving, a lot easier sometimes. So, you know, get that done. Make sure your AAA membership is up to date. We also don't do membership cards as much as we used to anymore. So, you know, you download the AAA app that has your membership card on it. That's handy. Make sure you do have, if your car has a spare tire, and not all cars have spare tires today. In fact, if you drive an electric vehicle or probably a plug-in hybrid, you probably don't have a spare tire. So you might have something called a mobility kit, which is an air compressor and goop and stuff. And you know, but still, the goop that seals the tire up actually has an expiration date on it. So if you have that and you have a car that's a little bit older, make sure you have that. On this person's 2012 Maxima, they probably have a spare. Check it to make sure it has air in it. I ran into a problem in my older car where I was doing a video at work about checking tire pressure. And I said, make sure you check all the four tires and check the spare. And I checked the spare, and when I got done, the Schrader valve, actually got stuck. And I was driving home, and I was on 495, and I was driving, we lived in Abington at the time, and I was driving home to Abington, and I got a flat tire. And I guess I'm going to put a spare on. Went to get the spare out, and it was flat. I'm like, oh, great. So I called AAA, and 20 minutes later, the tow truck showed up, and I said to him, look, I got the spare on, it's flat. Let's just air it up, and I'll be able to get home okay, and that's what we did. So when I got home, I'm like, where's it leaking from? I aired up the spare, and sure enough, right from the valve, it was leaking right there, replaced the little valve Schrader thing, and I was on my way. What else do I keep in my car? A flashlight, gloves, cell phone chargers handy. I also keep that jump pack. All the jump packs I have a USB connection, so you can plug in a cell phone wire, the wire charger at least. But travel with one if you're going on a long trip, and chances are you might be using your phone as a navigation device, so you probably have your phone plugged in. But just in case your car goes completely dead, I got another email from somebody who had a 2009 Hyundai Genesis, and the drive belt broke, the alternator belt broke, and when they got everything back together, the airbag light was still on. Well, that meant probably the battery went completely dead when the belt broke. And if they had a cell phone and the cell phone was dead, well, they're not going to use the car to charge up the cell phone. So having the jump pack makes it handy. The other thing I have, and our friends at Sullivan Tire will be mad at me. Our friends from Boston Mobile Tire, Jay, will be mad at me. But I also keep a tire plug kit in my car. And plugging a tire is, at best, a temporary repair. To properly repair a tire, it should be patched from the inside, and the hole should have a plug in it. So today what they use is a plug patch combination. So it looks like a patch with a rubber thing sticking out of it. And what you do is you clear the hole up, make sure it looks good, and you pull the patch plug through the hole, glue it all up from the inside, so you have a nice seal on the inside of the tire, but you also have a seal where the hole is on the outside to keep water and stuff from getting in, which can actually rust the steel reinforcement inside a steel belted radio, for instance. So you want to make sure that hole is sealed up. But if you're stuck out in the woods with the bears coming to get you, and you have a plug kit and an air compressor, and the tire's not damaged, you can plug the tire, fill it with air, get on your way, and all of a sudden it doesn't become a critical thing that you need to fix it today. You should fix it permanently. Back in the, I like to use the word, the olden days, that's how we, you know, originally we plugged tires. That's all anybody ever did. And people still plug tires all day, every day. Then when we got a little bit smarter about it, we actually plugged the tire. And then we cut off the plug flush with the inside of the tire and then scuffed up the inside of the tire and patched it on the inside. So the plug sealed the outside, the patch sealed the inside. Then they come out with these plug patch combination things, a little bit neater to use, I guess, but works. What you may find, though, depending on how fussy the tire store is, some people say, well, I'm not supposed to re-repair a repaired tire. Well, the plug was put in there as a temporary thing doing exactly what the patch did, you know. And I had somebody say, well, I can't fix that tire because it's already been plugged. No, you can fix it. It's fine. Just patch it on the inside like you would normally do it. So it can be done. So anyway, those are the kind of things I keep in my car in case of emergencies. And for somebody that has a 2012 car with 200,000 miles on it, I would keep at least that. One more thing I keep in my car, which is, again, a little bit of overkill. I keep a USB, not USB, OBD2 scan tool. And it's not a real, well, it is a real scan tool. It is a OBD2 Bluetooth tool. It's called Blue Drive. And you plug it into the under dash connector. You have an app on your phone. And just in case you're driving down the road and the check engine light comes on and you're like, huh, is that something I need to be worried about? Well, I can scan it with the little thing. And it's literally 2 inches by 2 inches. So it takes up no room in the back of the car. And I can plug it in, sync it to my phone, do a code check. And the Blue Driver one's actually pretty sophisticated. I can do a code check and see what's wrong. And is it just something simple like the last time I got gas, the gas cap was loose? Bob Bosworth, who's a co-owner of the Quincy Sun, and the Quincy Sun runs my column about once a month or so, I guess. He texted me the other day that his check engine light came on his Ram pickup truck, and unfortunately the dealer can't look at it for a couple of weeks. And he said, should I drive it? And I said, well, as long as the check engine light's not flashing, I wouldn't be too concerned about it, as long as it feels like it's driving normally. He did say the remote start isn't working, which is not all that unusual. A lot of times when you have a vehicle with a remote factory remote start, if you start the car and it notices the check engine light's on, it'll shut off right away because it doesn't want the engine running with like an engine misfire. So when the check engine light flashes, it indicates a spark plug or an ignition coil or maybe even a fuel injector is bad, and that flashing light is the one that means you need to take care of it immediately. Check engine light being on, it could just be the fuel door, which the new Ram trucks don't use a gas cap. They use a sealed up fuel door, and those can sometimes act up a little bit. In fact, I just got a couple weeks ago, got an email from somebody who had a Ford, I think, with the capless fuel thing, the lights on. It comes up that it came up with an issue, and I said, well, go and look at the little flapper valve, clean it the best you can, take that little funnel they give you so you can open it up, and spray some WD-40 in there. Kind of wipe around inside there, spray a little more WD-40 in there, and then either drive it for a few days and see if the light goes out, or clear the code and see if it comes back on. I prefer to drive it for a few days and see if the light goes out, because then you know you really fixed the problem. They emailed me back a couple of weeks later and they said, your suggestion worked. So, good to know. Why don't we take another break, pay some bills. Our phone number is 781-837-4900, 781-837-4900. Our phone lines are open. If you have a question about your car, a story to tell, give us a call at 781-837-4900. You're listening to the Car Doctor Program on 95.9 WATD. We'll be right back.
I am Marco, and I am always been full of life, full of energy, and always on the go. At the age of 21, I was diagnosed with kidney disease. My life was saved by an organ donor. Receiving a life-saving organ put my life back into play, and I was able to move forward and make my dreams come true. Anyone can sign up to be an organ donor, whether you're 16 or 96. Be a hero. Be an organ donor. Register today.
Register at mass.gov/organ donor. Sponsored by New England Donor Services.
AAA is with you at every moment in your life. They have 24-hour, 7 roadside assistance, which covers you in any car you're driving or riding in, even a rental or your friend's wheels. They have great member rates on home and auto insurance, savings on travel, hotels, and rental cars, and discounts on hundreds of your favorite brands. You're covered on and off the road. Learn more at AAA.com/join.
Talk radio with a South Shore point of view. Hi, I'm Kevin Tocci. Join me tomorrow for Monday Night Talk, where the South Shore comes to talk. Tomorrow night after the 6 o'clock news here on 95.9 WATD.
Make an appointment Sunday morning at 11 for John Paul, the Car Doctor, on 95.9 WATD. Now, back to the Car Doctor.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD, sometimes known as the Car Guy. We got to fix that. One of these days we got to fix it. But yeah, it's the Car Doctor program. I've been doing this on WATD for, I guess we're getting close to a couple of years now. But I've been doing, been on the radio for a long time. I don't know, 30 years or so. Been at AAA for almost 40 years. Hard to believe. And before that, worked for a variety of car repair places. But right now, let's talk to David in Holbrook. David, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
So far, it's still early.
I know. It is. I know. It's, you know, somebody will say that to me. You know, I'll be walking in the morning. They'll say, good morning. How are you doing yet? And I'm like, I don't know. It's too early. Can't tell you.
Okay. I got a 2014 Audi A4 standard turbo.
Yep.
Had plugs on 12/21 at 55,000 miles. It now has 68,000 miles. It has what I would say a slight miss.
Okay.
Mostly when it's cold. I've already gone the Seafoam and dry gas. It still persists. It's not really a miss. It's just a very slight hesitation, particularly when accelerating. Thought it might be maybe an injector or an injector solenoid if it has them. Not sure. Been fooling around with cars. I'm 83. Been fooling around with cars since I was 15. So I kind of know it's not, it doesn't seem to be a bad plug. Took it to one of the shops that does your scan for you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There are no codes.
Okay.
So, don't know. The guy that did it was very, very helpful, a manager at one of the parts places.
Yep.
And he fools around with Audis, has two of them used, and does his own work. He suggested it might be positive of a crank vent.
It could be, you know, that incorporates the valve cover. So it could be the PCV system causing the bit of a misfire. It could also be, some sort of a vacuum leak, like an intake manifold leak when the engine's cold. And then once it warms up, it kind of goes away. Also really common on these Audis is ignition coil failure. So, but that will eventually get worse to the point where it will start to misfire and it'll turn the check engine light on, and then you'll know for sure if that's what it is. You know, that would be one of the things that I would look at some point. But even with that, you know, a good thing to do at this point would be to be looking at things like fuel trim, because the fuel injection system will try to keep this kind of perfect mixture all the time. And right. If it's too rich or too lean, it'll show up in the trim. So you could look at the trim and go, well, wait a minute, it looks out of whack compared to what I'm normally used to seeing. And like I said, in these vehicles sometimes, you know, it'd be nice if you could say, well, I'll change the PCV valve. It doesn't really have a PCV valve that we're used to in older cars. So is that possible? And if it is, it will show up. You can do some kind of more or less simple tests to see if that's it. It could be, but it does turn into a little bit of work when you get to try to figure out what it is. So at this point,
it's not horrible, but
yeah,
you can notice it even the even when it warms up, it still has a tendency under acceleration to be there. It's not
yep.
like a solid mist, but you say, okay, this has got a little something going on
yep.
here.
Yeah, and like I said, that is that on that vehicle is. You know, there's an oil separator that's this big thing that attaches to the top of the engine, and that is basically the PCV valve, and that's a kind of big deal. And so, you know, you need to take out a couple of the coils, and you need to look at that, and you know, at some point you may need to replace it. But again, it will turn up in fuel trim. Usually you'll usually see it as a high number because it's trying to make up for that extra air that's coming into the system. So so I'd kind of look in that direction, providing you're not getting where you're not getting a check engine light. If you can find somebody that has a good scan tool where they can look at a little bit more readings on the vehicle, and they mm-hmm. can look at and there's some Audi, Volkswagen specialized tools that aren't really expensive now, or somebody that's just got a good general purpose scan tool where they can look at fuel trim. I think that's going to give you a little bit of the answer. And if you see it out of whack, then you'd be looking for things like vacuum leaks or this oil separator PCV type system, and you may need to replace that.
Well, I thank you very, very much. That's really helpful.
All right. Okay. You take care now, and thanks for calling in. And get that extra hour sleep.
Thank you much.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Let's see. What else do we have that came in today that might be interesting? This was one that I thought was kind of interesting because it's similar to a vehicle an issue I have with my own car, which I didn't think it was an issue until my wife told me it was. This person has a 2020 Ram 1500 Laredo, and they have very dim backup lights. And their dealer told them changing the LED lights would potentially mess up the electronics on my dash and somehow negate the warranty. Your thoughts? How much should I expect to pay for this? I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do LED backup lights because they can affect the electrical system. And recently I read an article from a Toyota magazine, and it was a Toyota Tacoma owner who swapped out the conventional backup lights for LEDs, and the body control module burned out because the body control module is what actually turns on the lights, not like previously when you put a car into reverse, it just fired up a circuit to turn power on to the backup lights. backup light switch power. That's all there was. It was nothing more than that. As the cars got a little bit more sophisticated, when you had a light that was out, it would show up as a warning on the dash, you know, light out, or maybe the turn signals would flash funny or do something like that. I wouldn't do it. I think you potentially could cause some problems with the electronics in the car. I've seen some of the LED bulbs that claim to be kind of plug and play, but some of them also say you need to add a resistor kit. So it's a plug and play bulb that also says you need to add something else to fool the computer to make sure it works. If you're somebody who backs up this Laredo Ram truck a lot, you know, in the dark, maybe you have a long driveway you have to back into, or you're trying to back into your garage or whatever the case is, maybe putting an auxiliary light bar on the vehicle somewhere, under the bumper, on the bed somewhere, you know, on a back rack or something that you can turn on separately and use the light when you need it, might make a whole lot more sense. So maybe do that instead. Somebody else wrote in that they have a Lincoln MKZ. It's an older one. It's 14 years old. The check rear parking aid warning comes up periodically when they shift into reverse. They don't bring it to the dealer because it works for 2 weeks and then doesn't work for 3 days and then works for 5 days and doesn't work for 3 weeks. And they said they tried doing a reset and they cleaned the little sensors, those things that look like funny plastic rivets on the bumper. They said didn't make any difference. Yeah, usually the problem is corrosion on the connectors to those sensors. Sometimes if you get under there, nice weather, look at where the sensors come through the bumper. Look for the connectors, pull them apart, see if you can clean them with some electrical cleaner. You may see corrosion and dirt in there. Clean them up, snap them back together, see if that solves the problem. In a lot of cases, it will. So that usually takes care of it. And then the question comes up all the time, if I switch to synthetic oil, can I switch back? Is it like a drug for the car? No, you can switch. Synthetic oil is just oil. It's oil that's been highly refined, that all the molecules kind of look like they're all the same. But can you switch back and forth? Absolutely. Old wives' tale that said you couldn't. So just that simple. If you need to get a hold of me during the week, jpaul@aaanortheast.com is the best way to get a hold of me, or go to AAA's website, AAA.com/car doctor. Send me an email. I answer every single email. Until next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, be good to your car, and if you see an emergency vehicle by the side of the road, slow down and move over. It saves lives. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.